Joan, who has broken out of the sexism in her domestic household, who has resisted. And yet, when faced with a situation of crisis, she falls back on those things that we always learn were the way to handle something and to make people understand. I think feminism has failed tremendously in our capacity to provide people with concrete ways that they can transform situations and concrete ways that we can enable people to understand. And I think that this is the task before us. And we cannot meet that task if we are not willing to vigilantly interrogate the violence in ourselves.
Bell Hooks, from her address to the 12th Annual Conference of the Texas Council on Family Violence in October 1993. This brilliant and extremely influential thinker died in December 2021. Her ideas live on. Wings is a weekly half-hour radio series covering the global women's movement and related issues, and distributed free of charge to community radio stations around the world. For more information, email wings@wings.org. Supporters in 2021 include community radio stations WERU and KMUD, Carolyn Byerly, the Women's Institute for Freedom of the Press, the International Association of Women in Radio and Television, U.S. Chapter, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning, and whose recent series of events can be viewed at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
This coming Thursday on Words and Pictures, we're talking Democracy Under Siege with filmmaker Laura Nix and political cartoonist Ann Telness. Ann Telness recently quit her job at The Washington Post after her cartoon showing billionaires bowing down to Trump was spiked by the paper. She's the star of a new documentary by Laura Nix, the filmmaker behind The Yes Men Are Revolting. So tune in for a special hour-long Words and Pictures this Thursday, February 13th, from 11 a.m. till noon on your community radio station, KBOO.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, and him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is filmmaker and architect Yael Melamed. She's talking about her documentary, Ada, My Mother, the Architect, which is screening as part of the Oregon Jewish Film Festival on Wednesday, February 19th at 7 p.m. at the Risa Center in Beaverton. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus for the first time by Zoom, Yael.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. You are in New York. We're doing this by Zoom. And I've watched your documentary. So it's about your mother. You sit down across the table with your mother and the camera, and you talk about her life in architecture. She was responsible for some of the biggest institutional buildings in Israel, such as the Supreme Court. They're all grand buildings, but they have a particular look that's very different. A lot of them go underground, and they're very complicated but very human buildings. Tell us a bit about your mother, when she grew up and how she got into architecture and where she practiced.
So my mother grew up in, was born in Palestine, and that is where her father, who was an architect, was working at the time. And her brother, she had an older brother who also grew up in Palestine, and they saw the state come into being. It was a very different time back then. You know, her father's generation came from Europe and from all over the world, but a lot of the architectural language came from Europe and was very influenced by local architecture. And he built some of the, you know, major institutions at his time during his life, as well as housing and cultural institutions. And then my uncle studied at the AA in London. My mother followed in his footsteps, and both of them really also continued to work in that vein of trying to make this young country the best it could be through the work that they did. And clearly, we all know it's a very complicated country. They've worked through some very complicated times. So for me, this film was very much exploring my mother's legacy, but also exploring the legacy of the entire family and what it means to have dedicated one's life to building in a place that is so complicated. And for my mother, you know, in many ways, very disappointing in terms of what's happened politically and what's happened in terms of socially, how people see each other. So for me, I was interested in a lot of different things, not only the architecture and not only my mother, but kind of a way of thinking about home and what that means to people.
I mean, particularly now, you know, people have a sort of very set view of what Israel is and who's running Israel and what the country is, but just by looking at it, it's government. But you set the movie in her youth, where there's much more of a sort of a kibbutzy feel to the whole place. You know, it's very kind of like a collective feeling. They're building for each other. Somebody says there is no self. Her dad, so your grandfather, built apartment buildings.
No, he built a lot of different things. He built apartment buildings. He built the concert hall in Tel Aviv. He built an enormous amount. He died quite young, actually. He died at age 56, but had built well over 200 buildings before he died. He was involved in the Knesset building, which is the parliament building. But, you know, things were so different back then. My grandfather was involved in the building of the Knesset. And this isn't in the movie, but it wasn't done. He died before it was finished, and it wasn't done according to his plans. And so my grandmother actually sued in order to get his name off the building, and won. And that she felt very strongly that if it didn't represent, you know, what he had agreed to, then his name should not be on it. So and I think it's a story that indicates a very different time. One wouldn't see that happen often today.
What was her earliest work when growing up in Israel? And then when they moved to New York, what did your mother do in New York?
Well, she went to study architecture in London and then came back. She didn't finish in London. She finished in Israel. And then her father died when she was quite young, which was a great blow to her. And she and my uncle and my father were very involved in just making sure the office, my grandfather's office, would survive. So she was quite involved in that for a while, really helping out in any way she could with all of the projects that were ongoing in the office. And then my father had an opportunity to leave Israel for his work, and she decided that it would be a good idea for him to go, and she went with him. She felt that he had helped her so much, it was now her turn to help him. Mm-hmm. And so they made their way to New York. And in New York, she started working for an Italian architect that had done a lot of work in New York City, a man named Romaldo Giorgola, who was very involved at Columbia. So he both hired her at his office, but then also brought her with him to Columbia to teach. And she began teaching at Columbia, which became a very important part of her life in New York. So that's what she did at that time. And it's interesting, with the release of this film, there are a lot of ex-students that have kind of come back into our focus or into our world. And it's been astonishing to hear what an influence she had on them during those years, that they saw her as just very generous and very insightful and kind of different. And she's just beloved, which I kind of knew, but I didn't realize the extent.
Oh, okay.
That was the case.
So really, she was working at Columbia, but she, as part of the movie, you know, narrative, is she didn't get tenure And because of that, like after 14 years of sort of toiling away, she was kind of passed over and then decided to relocate to Israel.
She never really made the decision. Like, we never felt that she one day decided to leave, but she decided to spend a little bit more time in Israel and to try and work some more, given that she felt unappreciated at Columbia. And by chance, she and my uncle were invited together for this very prestigious international competition for the Supreme Court of Israel. And they were truly underdogs for that building, and they won. And as a result of that, both because it was such an important building, but also because she was contractually asked to sign something that said that she would not leave Israel for more than a few weeks a year, she basically ended up being in Israel full time once that competition was decided. And after that building opened, really her career took off in Israel, and she wanted to build. You know, in a way, the Columbia disappointment turned into something fortuitous. It didn't feel that way at the time, but she certainly looks at it that way today. But she also looks at those years at Columbia as incredibly beneficial and foundational. She talks so much about how she learned so much more from her students than anything else, or than any other place, that was really an incredible learning time for her.
Yeah. So she says that, you know, when they went for that job to build to design the Supreme Court of Israel, there were like two of the other entrants, I think, were the top firms in the world, and they were sort of, you know, just, yeah, like you said, the underdogs.
I mean, it was more than just two. The whole group was some of really the most well-known architects in the world. And my mother and my uncle had not really worked together for years. And before that, when they had worked together, it was more Rami was her brother was ahead of her in terms of his experience. And it was after my grandfather had died, so she was really more working for him. And here they were real partners on the building. So it was the first time they had worked together in that capacity. And that was really almost the last or the only building they did together. They then partnered one more time on the Israel airport. And then they were supposed to partner again, or they did partner again on the Prime Minister's office, but that building has gotten very stuck in bureaucracy and has not come to fruition. And of course, my uncle died now over a decade ago. So
But your mother's still with us, right?
yes, she is still with us, and she's still working a lot less than before. And she's much more actually in the US than she is in Israel. She's definitely still with us and amazing.
As you're watching the film, you're really watching you, because you're behind the camera, but you're in shot a lot, talking to your mother across the table, and she's kind of drawing. Like, she seems to be one of those people who's always drawing, and there's beautiful scenes of this very thick pencil. I think that's her favorite, right? Or this wide pencil.
It's a soft pencil that's a 6B pencil.
So she's just sort of sketching and talking to you. And I think that the sort of funny things are, you say you're kind of arguing with her, and she keeps saying, "Oh, that's it, enough. I've had enough. I'm stopping." What's going on there?
Well, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to make the film, I think she's the kind of person that we don't really pay enough attention to. She's somebody who doesn't like attention. She likes to do her work. She sees all of the mysteries of life in the work that she does. But she has so much knowledge and so much to teach and such a devotion to the work in, I think, such a positive way. It's never about her. And as a result, you know, she doesn't search for the limelight. She's not interested in it. And there's a kind of search for truth and beauty that I think is really wonderful. And we don't hear enough from characters who work that way. And really, when I started the film, I had no intention of being in the film at all. But because she's such a reluctant protagonist, those scenes between us where I'm asking her or joking with her, or she's saying, I don't want to talk to you anymore, ended up showing so much about her character that they felt like important ways to actually tell her story. So I ended up being very much in the film. And, you know, one of the nicest things my editor said to me when we were working on the film is she said she'd rarely seen a relationship between mother and daughter that was so filled with mutual respect. And it was such an interesting phrasing because, you know, you could think that it would be, oh, I've never seen a relationship with so much love or so much love on screen. But it was I thought that choice of words was really interesting. And I think it's true. We do have such mutual respect as women. And you don't see that so often on screen. So
for the sort of technical people at home, just tell us, what was your setup? You're sitting there. It looked like a very minimal kind of camera. What was that?
So it was, again, I make documentaries in not the most efficient way. We set out to make, I would say, a conventional film. And as we were filming, I kind of felt that something was missing. And I worked with a terrific cinematographer. I worked with two cinematographers, one who comes more from the documentary world and one who comes more from the fiction world. And the one from the fiction world at one point said to me, what do you think about us turning the cameras vertical for a special type of portrait? And I kind of thought it was crazy, but I was out of ideas. And I said, you know what, let's try it. And so we tried filming my mother with these two cameras that were actually turned vertically. And it was amazing because I hadn't intended... the language in the film in which you see my mother in two perspectives simultaneously is such a perfect architectural language. It mimics the way you look at a building. You see more often on kind of the sheets of paper that describe a building, you'll see two elevations or an elevation and a section. So it's a very architectural language, and I wish I'd thought about it before because in some ways it seems so obvious. But it really was by chance. We happened to want to do something different, and we tried something, and then all of a sudden, I didn't think we'd use both images simultaneously, but in these specific areas in the film is made in chapters, and the head of each chapter has this unusual visual language of two images of my mother at the same time, and then translation on the left instead of where subtitles usually are. So I kind of love that we were playing with the space, or we play with the space of the film in much the way that, you know, you play with the space of a sheet of paper in architecture.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is film director and architect Yael Melamed. She is talking about her documentary, Ada, My Mother, the Architect, which is screening as part of the Oregon Jewish Film Festival on Wednesday, February 19th at the Risa Center in Beaverton. Your mother talks about glass boxes, you know, sort of modern architecture, kind of just sitting on the surface of the landscape or the earth and being kind of temporary almost, but her building, she likes to dig into the earth, have sort of courtyards, things on different levels. She talks about rootedness, being rooted into the earth. Is this an idea she articulated later in her life, or did she always have the words to describe what she was doing?
I think certainly for the last 20 years, these are the kinds of ideas that she has talked about and that are important to her. And I think in trying to continue to build and to find inspiration, talking in this way is very much her. She is very, very poetic about architecture. And she thinks that buildings should have a sense of belonging to place. And it's not that she doesn't like all glass buildings, but I think she feels that, you know, glass buildings have a place, but not in every place. And, you know, that glass buildings shouldn't be the same everywhere. And that because they often come off the ground just as glass, she says in the film, and I think it's a beautiful idea, you could just push them anywhere and it wouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. And so for her, she wants a building to belong. It's very important to her. And I could imagine that she would say there is some place where a building should feel like it floats and could be pushed along, but that in general, you know, architecture should be responsive to place, to landscape, to light. I mean, you know, her buildings are quite heavy and rooted, and they're often concrete or stone, which is very suited to the climate of Israel. It's a very hot country. It doesn't make a ton of sense to build in glass in Israel. So a lot of that is about a belief in local architecture and responsive to particular situations in which one lives.
She has a quote, "The cheapest building material is light," which I think is an amazing way of thinking. And yeah, you're right. She's very poetic when she talks about buildings. So she talks about the most perfect building being the Pantheon in Rome. And I was like, oh, is it? Like, and she explains why, you know, like there's this dome with a kind of skylight in the top, and the way your eye is drawn around the building, it's almost like you're out of control. So she talks a lot about where the foot goes and where the eye goes when you're in a building or when you're outside experiencing a building, which is just a really helpful way for non-architects to try and understand the work of an architect, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, that was part of it. She really, I think people who are so devoted to their work in the way that she is, you can kind of see the whole world. You can see life through their eyes. And I think what she says about, you know, there's a place in the film where she talks about the program, that if everybody in the program gets exactly what they want, then the whole kind of falls apart. And that's true for architecture, but I think it's so true for life. Like if we don't look out for each other, the whole, mm-hmm. I think, crumbles. The program is usually what a client will give to an architect as part of the explanation of the needs of a building. And, you know, in some ways, people who design a house have a program also. They say, you know, they want two or three bedrooms, or, you know, a living room and maybe a special room for working, or a kitchen that is very particular, or a dining room, or a dining room that's in the kitchen. That is a kind of program. But for bigger buildings, you know, a university, you need however many classrooms, and you need offices and a cafeteria and an entrance space. But my mother, we had a gathering with some of her students recently who were so excited to see her again after not seeing her in a long time. And they said how much it impressed upon them her view that you always needed to find something beyond the program, that the program at its essence is usually quite boring because it's just a quantity of certain things. Mm-hmm. And that it was the architect's role to find something beyond the program that is a kind of story of what this place wants to be. So, for example, we don't talk about it in the film, but there's a beautiful house. And I didn't really show a lot of her homes in the film because I wanted to show more of the public buildings. But there's a home that she designed, and she was given a certain program of the number of bedrooms and kind of what was important to the family. But at some point, she started to realize that they talked a lot about books. And so for her, the books became the story of the house, and the entire house was really built around the library for this house, and it became a very open house where you could kind of see books everywhere. Mm-hmm. So just as a small example of how program mm-hmm. And beyond program one needs to be thinking about.
So the Supreme Court of Israel, there's a great scene where, you know, somebody says, the Supreme Court of America is like a bunch of steps going up to pillars. You feel like a little person going up there. But in this one, she created this stairway that comes on this huge, huge window with a vista of the whole city. That's the kind of drama or sort of feel she was going for, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just that was the former president of the Supreme Court who was speaking, who would be the equivalent of the Chief Justice here. And it was just beautiful to hear him talk about the building. He says, you know, he goes every day and he walks up those big steps and he feels emotional. And it was interesting when the competition for the Supreme Court happened, the Chief Justice at the time, who was a different Chief Justice, he wanted something that was more grand and like some of the halls of justice that you see around the world. And he came to love this building that was much more kind of modest and low to the ground, and in which it really is about everyday people being able to come to the court. It is still very grand. It's a different grandeur. It's a grandeur that, as the president that the former president of the Supreme Court mentioned, he says, you know, it feels like it is your grandeur, not a grandeur that is imposed on you, one that is meant to make you feel small. Mm-hmm. It is one meant to make you feel big and respected and meaningful. And I thought that was really beautiful. I hadn't thought about the American Supreme Court that way. I've never been inside. Mm-hmm. But we show in the film a photograph and you see, oh my, and you know, and then I notice, wow, people are so small when they walk in. And I think that's the kind of thing I hoped people would get out of the film, is thinking about buildings in a different way, kind of saying, wow, I never thought about it that way. I never thought that a building should tell a story. Mm-hmm. I never thought that I should go into something and realize that it makes me feel really good or makes me feel smaller as a person. And we're surrounded by architecture all the time. I think COVID made us realize that it's important, but I hope that people can think even more about how it can make us feel better or worse in our lives and what we should aspire to as part of making our lives and public lives better.
Mm-hmm. When you visit Portland on the 17th of February, I'd be interested if you go to the Multnomah County Courthouse, which is only a few years old in Portland. It's on the river. It's a big glass box, but it's actually, it's got a stateliness about it. If you go in, there's a giant lobby with artwork. Everyone's waiting, you know, all the people for jury duty or whatever, if they're going to get banged up by the judge, they're all waiting around. And if you get up to the higher levels, you know, there's spectacular views. It's all very modern and feels good. And it's, I like that. The feeling that a building was built for the people rather than the way it looks or the, you know, the budget, whatever.
I love going to see buildings, so thank you for the recommendation.
Documentary, you get people like Frank Gehry on camera, Kenneth Frampton. You know, you get some interesting people talking, because like the phrase "my mother the architect," you're kind of saying no one's heard of her, right? I hadn't heard of her, but then you find all these people who have heard of her and they have so much to say about her achievements. It gives another dimension to talking about a visual product. You know, you're talking about a woman or a human being and how their mind worked. Is that a lot of work, getting those people on camera?
I mean, she is, within the architectural profession, she is known. And she, you know, in addition to teaching at Columbia, she taught at Yale, and she was a visiting critic at Penn and Harvard. So she, and it was a, I think, a really wonderful time in the architectural profession when she was teaching. There was really this belief that architecture could solve great social problems. I think it's still true, but there was a greater, I don't know, optimism, I think, at that time. Mm-hmm. that she was part of. She designed it. There were some ideas competitions she did at the time. One that I love, for the Second Avenue subway in New York City, which ended up being built only a few, finished just a few years ago. But she designed something in the 70s that was so, that was incredibly, how should I say, forward thinking. So she was known, and I think people were happy to speak about her. But you know, her work has been so much in Israel that a lot of people, Frank Gehry amongst them, has not seen a lot of the work in person. Mm-hmm. only online. So there was a difficulty in that, but they were very happy to talk about her.
I mean, that's the beauty of a documentary like this. It gives you a full portrait, really, of someone with a long life and a long career that I, or, you know, as a non-architect, or have never heard of it. And it's just a beautiful entrance into another way of looking at architecture.
Well, I'm so glad you liked it. I hope people will come and see the film and discover someone that inspires them. People often ask me, I guess as the final thing, people often ask me what she thought of the movie. And I always like saying that she watched the movie and was very quiet afterwards, and then kind of turned to me so surprised and said, "I can't believe it's not boring." So if my, you know, so she said it's not boring. So I hope other people will find it not boring as well.
He says some other salty stuff to you in the interviews. I'll leave that for the viewers to discover. My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was filmmaker and architect Yael Melamed. She was talking about her documentary Ada, My Mother, the Architect, which screens as part of the Oregon Jewish Film Festival.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Andy Warhol, Andy Warhol, so
very
much
scream.
Can't tell them apart.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
K-Boo.
Esto es KBOO Portland, la radio comunitaria impulsada y empoderada por voluntarios.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 11 de febrero del 2021.